We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome to Light Years Radio. We are recording this at 8:30 p.m., night before the draft. We are less than 24 hours away from the draft. Sitting in for Andy Liu, I have Aaron Larsoul. Aaron, what's up, my man?
Chilling. Hello, everybody out there. I know everybody's disappointed. I'm seeing in the comments already, everybody thinks Andy is already drunk in preparation for tomorrow. So.
Nah. He's got a commitment. But we had to put out another episode for everyone listening day of the draft. I am feeling a lot of activity about to come to the surface. Aaron, take my temperature here. I think we're about to see a significantly more active draft than we saw last year, and maybe the last 2 to 3 years in terms of trades, in terms of a lot of movement among teams. Maybe not any big things. I'm not saying, a huge superstar trade or anything's going to happen, but I have a feeling, based on everything I'm hearing, we're going to see a lot of movement.
Yeah, you mean league-wide?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think one of the reasons for that, I agree with you, and I think one of the reasons for that, obviously draft day is one of those like deadline days which spurs on movement. And like a car, as soon as you drive it off the lot, it becomes less valuable for a lot of teams. The draft pick becomes less valuable once it becomes a player. So it is a kind of a deadline that gets people moving around. I think the other reason for that is if you talk to scouts and people around the league, as you certainly do with Sam's sources, they will tell you, and I agree, that this draft, some people think there's three, some people think there's four guys that are legitimately number one picks in normal drafts. But even outside of that, throughout the first round, everybody thinks this is a pretty deep draft. So the fact that this draft seems to be kind of stocked with talent, in addition to the fact that it is a strange year because of the calendar, and also a draft kind of spurs movement because it's an artificial deadline. I think you're right. There is going to be some movement around the league.
And then this always gets missed, but like last year, COVID, no combine, none of the normal stuff. I feel like teams were a little less trigger happy. So you might get a little even more, like teams kind of accrued assets over the last year. Like we know the Warriors did. We know they didn't trade the number two pick last year. We know they've been holding the picks close to the chest. So I feel like there's a lot of teams who have kind of a ton of capital, and maybe now is the time they want to make their move. Maybe not, but I do think it's going to be a pretty entertaining show tomorrow. And to get to your point,
but in comparison to last year, I think you're absolutely right. But the other thing is, in comparison to last year, a lot of stuff happens in the draft, even if it's just moving up in the draft because teams fall in love with somebody. But because there was so little scouting able to be done for last year's draft, it was harder to fall in love with the guy because you just didn't see him. There wasn't enough tape or experience. Very few.
Not everyone got to take James Wiseman out to dinner. That's kind of how it went. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be pretty entertaining. For those of you who are coming to the draft show tonight, we'll have fun. If you're watching on TV, I'm sure it'll be really entertaining. But let's get into this. So kind of the big rumor today, and we've heard news about this, is Toronto may be looking to make some moves, maybe looking to move out of the four spot. No one really knows what they're going to do. There is an assumption Jalen Suggs will go four, but you keep hearing Toronto's not in love with Jalen Suggs. And that's not even that's not surprising to me when you look at the history of the type of players Masai Ujiri has drafted. Jalen Suggs doesn't really fit the bill. I kind of think Toronto controls the draft right now. Like, we know who's going 1, 2, 3, maybe 2 and 3 flop. We don't know the order of the top three, but it's going to be Cade, Jalen Green, Evan Mobley in some order. And I don't think those teams are moving out of the top three. Four is really where the draft gets interesting. And there's rumors now that from Chad Ford, the Warriors might be interested in trading up to four to get Jalen Suggs. We obviously know about the Siakam for Wiseman in the 7th pick trades. I think everything kind of revolves around Toronto.
Yeah, I agree. And the kind of the latest stuff, you mentioned it, that Toronto doesn't seem to be in love with Suggs. And you know, some of the latest stuff that you're seeing now around is that they might be leaning Scotty Barnes. The question is that in an attempt to get whoever was actually going to draft Scotty Barnes and thought that they were going to have him at 5 or 6, whether that's OKC or Orlando, is that just kind of to leak to try to get them to hop up a spot or two spots respectively,
right?
To get their guy if they want Barnes. So as you mentioned,
Masai is a good poker player. This isn't his first rodeo. Let me ask you. Let's get an outside perspective here. Okay. Do you buy that he doesn't like that Jalen Suggs is not the player he wants?
So here's the thing. The strange thing with Toronto, and I agree with you that the draft kind of revolves around them because there is that top three. And then it seems like for most teams, there is a fourth, and there has been for some time. But Toronto is in a strange spot because are they trying to rebuild or are they trying to win now? All of those questions are what happens if they're going to re-sign Lowry and then Fred VanVleet. If they have both of those guys, Suggs is pretty duplicative of both of them. If Lowry walks or they trade him in a sign-in trade, then maybe you see it. But then do you want to give the keys to a young guy? Then what do you do with Siakam? So I think Toronto is in a strange place because they are kind of at the fork in the road where they need to make a decision. So I kind of, as an asset play, I still would expect them to take Suggs fourth unless they can trade out of that. But it would not shock me if he was not the apple of their eye, depending on which direction they want to go.
What do you think of Jalen Suggs? Obviously was kind of the college basketball revelation, partially because Gonzaga was just such a good team. Like they played like a pro style offense. Like, you know, most college teams are an ugly watch. Gonzaga was not an ugly watch, but putting that aside, what do you think of Jalen Suggs as a pro prospect?
I like him. I'm not in the group that thinks of him as in a random season that he's in consideration for a number one pick. I like him a lot. I think he's going to be really good defensively. I think he's going to be steady offensively. I think he's going to be able to do a little bit of everything. I think he may function best as kind of a combo guard, as not necessarily just specifically a point guard. You know, somebody who can kind of play with another point guard, can run offense for you, but will function best as kind of a combo guard. But I think
he's going to be good. Holiday 2.0.
Exactly. I don't know if he has Drew's. I think he may have a little bit more offensive upside than Drew, but not quite as much defensive upside as Drew, who most NBA guys would tell you he's the guy they would least like to see in a one-on-one scenario. But I think he's going to be good. I don't know that he has like the star potential or superstar potential that the top couple guys have. Maybe Mobley has, maybe he doesn't. But I think he's going to be a solid player. And the Warriors fans talk about Malcolm Brogdon a lot, you know, who's kind of a fringe all-star, being an all-star a couple times, that kind of guy. I think Suggs could have that kind of career.
Yeah, he feels like – I just can't see him busting. Like, I agree with you. I think people who think he's a potential superstar, like, a lot of things needs to go right for him over the next few years. But, like, I can't see a world in which he isn't a productive winning player for the next decade.
Exactly.
So,
Yeah, and that's the thing. I can also understand why a team like Toronto or OKC or Orlando would be enamored with maybe Scotty Barnes or Kuminga more so. Like, very good chance they will never be as good as Jalen Suggs, but also decent chance, or maybe not decent. There's a chance they could be superstars. It could be much better than him too. Just a higher variance pick, higher upside, higher risk of busting. And I think it's, there's some point in the lottery, and there is like a confluence of how good your team is, where you're going, where fit becomes important as opposed to just talent. There's some point where like the talent is overwhelming and I don't care what the fit is. You just draft for the best talent. But then at some point, as you move later, somewhere in the lottery, it becomes, you have to factor in talent more and more. And I think it's interesting with Suggs, depending on what team it is and depending on how much farther in the lottery you get, whether you start just drafting for talent or how much the fit factors in. And that will be a question for him, a question for Kuminga, as it relates to the Warriors, et cetera. But that's going to be fascinating to me to watch at what point the fit starts factoring in as a bigger factor than just talent.
Would you trade Wiseman in the 7 to get up to number 4?
I would not. No.
Yeah, me neither.
I would also.
That one was floated out there, and that just seems, that's too much. That's a little aggressive for me.
No, I would not. I mean, it's a, for if you were going to say for 3, then
you're right.
That's a different conversation. I still think I wouldn't, but then that becomes how much better of a prospect do you like Mobley than Wiseman? I still wouldn't do it, but I think that's a better conversation. I also, for the sake of,
I'd do 30, it for Cade Cunningham.
I would too. But for this, I wouldn't.
But there's a reason Detroit wouldn't. So
I wouldn't do the other Toronto trade. I wouldn't Siakam for 7-14 Wiggins and Wiseman. That's too much for me too. If you combine the two trades, then I think you have something to talk about. But I wouldn't do either as it's been kind of whispered.
I think that's the dream scenario if you're looking for the perfect confluence of prospect plus player helps you now, which would be if you could somehow get the number 4 pick and Pascal Siakam for the whole poo-poo platter, for Wiseman, for the 7, for the 14. I just don't see why Toronto would do it. Obviously for Wiggins too. So
yeah, I think you'd have to throw in at least one more future pick if you're the Warriors, right, to get them thinking about
And let's be real. The 14 is just, it's just a random first round pick. It's not a particular, like, it's, what's more attractive, the number 14 pick or the 2023 first round pick, which doesn't, you don't know what number it is right now.
Yeah, 22. I mean,
is it basically the same thing on paper?
No, I think this one's more valuable than 2023. But if you told me 2026 and you can project out and say, you know, Steph's not going to be around anymore and Draymond's not going to be around anymore and Clay's not going to be around anymore,
sure, maybe.
Then I think that might be more enticing.
You're betting on Father Time. Yeah. I hear you on that one. I don't know. It's going to be interesting because I have no read, because I could see Toronto going either direction. Like the Warriors, in my opinion, are trying desperately to play it up like they're totally comfortable with this 8-year rebuild project because they don't want people thinking they're desperate so they don't have to overpay for trades. I think that's like 99% of what the Warriors are doing. That's just my 2 cents on it. Like, if they were really interested in a long-term rebuild, they wouldn't be running up the luxury tax bill the way they are.
Absolutely right. But also, like, they have to, right? what do you expect them to say? I agree with you.
Meanwhile, but yeah.
Also,
yeah,
that's what they should be saying, even if it's a lie, which it probably is.
Meanwhile, someone like Toronto, like, I could legitimately believe either way. I could believe Masai has zero interest in a rebuild and wants to kind of go through the middle and get back in the playoffs. Or I could buy that he it's time to pull the plug and he's trying to get, you know, as much draft capital as possible. Like, it's very much in play both ways, and I can't read it. That's why I think everything on tomorrow's draft hinges on Toronto.
I agree with you, but also, do we know what Masai's scenario is, right? Like, I don't, he sticking, right? We don't know what he's doing either.
That's what I'm saying.
That's the other complicating factor. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think,
like, do we know if he's sticking around is what I mean.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's the other part of it. He has not signed an extension there.
Right.
So that makes it even more complicated. It's hard to say what they're going to do. You know what? Can we answer this? Aaron, I want to ask you this one question because the chat's going off about it. There's some people saying we're overvaluing Wiseman. I disagree with that. I'm not throwing away last year's number two pick who's 19 or 20 years old just to move up three spots. I would do it to move up for like Cade Cunningham. But let me ask you this. If Wiseman came out in this year's draft, where is he going?
Four or five?
I think he's
after Mobley, but depending on what you think about Suggs, I think he is with Suggs. I would say he's in the tier with Suggs ahead of Scotty Barnes and Kuminga. At least for me, that's where I would put him.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was thinking. I think Cade, Jalen Green, and Mobley are probably in a tier of their own. And then he's in that next tier of guys where you're like, the upside is very tantalizing, but it's not quite the sure thing.
But the interesting part of it is how you feel about Wiseman. Granted, there are some similarities, there are some differences, but how you feel about Wiseman probably informs how you feel about Mobley too, just because it kind of speaks to the value of 7-footers in this NBA. Mobley is more advanced as a switch defender and maybe has shown a little bit more offensively, but he doesn't have the physical tools that Wiseman has. So there are some people that think like Mobley should be the number one pick, period. So I think all of that is a little bit connected, but I would put him probably in the tier with Suggs after those top three guys.
Yeah. And then, I mean, the second part of the scenario is, does Wiseman only play three college games? If we watch him play 15, 16 games, what do we think? Because he'd physically dominate college. I think he'd, I don't know. It's hard to say how that whole thing plays out, but let's move this forward a little bit and then let's open this to questions. So it appears the Warriors are going to be potentially looking at Jonathan Kuminga. Most of the mocks have him going to the Warriors. Now, they're just mock drafts. No one's really been able to tell what's going to happen in that like 6 to 10 range. Like all the names have been flipped back and forth between teams over the last month.
So when I was talking earlier about like the talent versus fit thing, I think that kind of comes to a head if it's Jonathan Kuminga available for the Warriors. He is a pretty terrible fit for this Warriors team and probably doesn't help at all next year. However, I think his talent may be too much to pass up. He is like for the last however many years, This has been thought as a 5-player draft, including him. He has slipped some behind Barnes recently, and perhaps even behind Booknight, depending on who you're talking to recently. But that talent was overwhelming. And at the first game or two with the Ignite, there was thoughts that he could be in the mix for number one. So I think for the Warriors, that talent, if he's there at 7, is just kind of wins the day and you take him. Even if it's just as a talent play, as an asset play to think about trading him for the future. But the Warriors have different goals in the near term than most lottery teams. So I would understand if that would not be their pick. He would be their pick if I was the Warriors at 7, but with the understanding that he is a pretty awful fit. He's a ball stopper. He's going to need a bunch of touches and shots to develop. And that is not something that's going to work in the Warriors ecosystem anytime soon.
Who's RAR? Kuminga or Wiseman last year? I think it might be Kuminga.
I think it's Kuminga because Wiseman has more of an excuse because he's dependent on others to get him the ball. Kuminga just has the ball and does what he dominates the ball and does whatever he wants, usually not that efficiently.
Yeah,
so
you
think Kuminga is more raw.
You would think you could kind of put Wiseman into a box easier, just be like set a screen and lob, even though he was bad at both those things year one, more so than a perimeter player who's just naturally gonna get touches, and if they're just gonna do their own thing, it's a real problem. So let's move to one more topic and we're gonna open this. I want your favorite Warrior draft memory.
So when you texted me this earlier, I came up with a bunch, and so I have them categorized into three categories. One category is these guys are really smart. One category is I was I was wrong because I thought these drafts were going to save the Warriors. And then one was
that's pretty much my teenage years.
One was I was right, and I begged them not to make this mistake. So where should we go?
let's just go one through three. Yeah, we'll go in the order you listen.
The Warriors think these guys are really smart. I think my two least favorite Warrior draft picks ever are Todd Fuller and Adonel Foyle, because as soon as the picks were made, the Warriors were trying to tell us how smart they were at Colgate and North Carolina State. I don't need GPA.
Oh, that's, by the way, that is part of, look, Wiseman is another tier talent-wise in them. But when they started running the, he speaks Mandarin, he wore a suit, I just got flashbacks of Epe Udo, Todd Fuller, Adonel Foyle. And it's like, don't do this to this kid. This kid is not a big stiff. He definitely needs to learn how to play basketball, but he's not like, those guys were just huge stiffs. And it brought back, it was some PTSD.
You're telling me what Todd Fuller, like what he got as a, I don't even remember, but like as an architecture major at North Carolina State. Thanks. And then two picks later is Kobe Bryant. The late, great Kobe Bryant. And then Adonel Foyle.
The following pick after Kobe, Steve Nash. Or sorry, Peja Stojakovic. Then two picks after that, Steve Nash. So, you know, they just passed on three basically Hall of Famers.
Yes, and then one pick after Adonel Foyle, the next pick after Adonel Foyle.
Tracy McGrady.
So that was the Warriors trying to tell us that they were smart by telling us that their players were smart. The two drafts, or the two picks mostly, that made me think that the Warriors had it figured out and the Warriors were going to turn it all around. 2005, I watched Ike Diago destroy Cal over and over and over for Arizona State. And then Monte, and then for some reason, I thought Chris Taft was going to be good. And then in 08, Anthony Randolph, I think he had us all fooled. So those were my two drafts that I had decided these guys are going to be really good. And then this one I actually got right. Well, you mentioned him in between Steph and Clay in 2010. I was begging for Paul George when they took Epe Udo, because my brother, who went to Michigan, shout out Michael, who's probably listening to this. He went to Michigan, and Epe played at Michigan before Baylor. So I asked my brother about him, and he was like, he basically gave me the description of what current Kevon Looney looks like after about five hip surgeries. And said he basically moves like that. So no, this guy can't play.
I just, the Udo, every time I see Udo's name, I think of Larry Riley, who went on KNBR, went on like ABC7, all these places, and used the same like stump line. He's like, we need some more beef, and he's going to give us some beef. We need some beef inside. He used the word beef in every interview for 6 weeks straight. That, you know, it was just, these are the glory days when you can remember the sales pitches of players you knew couldn't play before they ever stepped on the floor.
Who was the dude that was on ABC 7 that like stole the jacket out of the locker room? He was probably talking to that dude, right? That's not around anymore. And by the way,
I forgot about that. That was only like 2 years ago.
Shout out Epe Udo. He's on that Nigerian team that punked the U.S. in Vegas. So shout out to him. He's
made a nice little career for himself. He just wasn't the number six pick. It's actually your Looney point is correct. It's like if you took Looney number six, you would be just so upset. But, you know, Looney last pick of the first round, you're pretty happy with it.
Yeah, but we also knew that Udo moved like Looney now before we knew that Looney moved like Looney.
That's true. That is true. Looney did have more hip surgeries than any 22-year-old should ever have. So. All right, let's go to your last category here.
Oh, no, I mixed them together. But my actual favorite Warriors draft moment is another Michigan moment was trading. It ended up being ill-fated, but trading Penny Hardaway for Chris Webber, because I liked that team before they got Chris Webber. And then once getting Chris Webber, I thought that the team was destined for good things. It was in his first year, and then he and Don Nelson did not see eye to eye. And
then
we watched a lot of Tom Gugliotta 17 footers after that.
Yeah. That's when the Weber thing went sideways. That's when character became the number one, the number one thing on every draft board. And lo and behold, character doesn't mean much if they can't play.
It does not. Shout out Todd Fuller.
I was going to say, oh God, yeah.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I'm going to open this to questions now. Give us your favorite Warrior draft moments or just any sort of question related to the draft. Maxwell, batting leadoff.
Hey, guys, first off, fuck this guy Tommy in the chat. He's being really mean to me, and I don't
like it.
I'm joking. I'm just kidding. I have a question about what to do at 14. If both guys are available, would you prefer Davion Mitchell or Chris Duarte? Since they're both similar, they're both four-year guys, who would you prefer?
What are you doing at 7 in this hypothetical?
Not taking Mitchell.
Okay, but I would say that in
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, you take Book Knight, however you say it.
Book Knight. Okay. If you take Book Knight, I guess you have to take a wing. Aaron, why don't you explain your logic? I think I get where you're going with this.
Yeah, well, because if I think that if you're taking Book Knight, who is 6'3", then taking Davion, who is 6 foot even at 14, becomes a little bit less palatable.
You're really rounding down. Book Knight's 6'4" without shoes. 6'3" okay. And 3/4 of an inch.
Fair enough.
Round up.
Hey, you know, I've been rounding up my whole life. check out my Tinder. I've been rounding up my whole life. I think you need a little bit more size if you take Book Knight 7th. I think you need more size. So that's my reasoning for why I would. And by the way, you and I've had this conversation. Like, I would take Davion Mitchell 14, but I don't think he's a particularly good fit with the Warriors at all.
Yeah, it's just gonna be a nice little backup point guard. I'd rather go with the wing, because wings you can at least fluidly play in a bunch of lineups. And if you think Duarte is a guy who can play day one, you can't have enough wings to just throw in different lineup combinations.
Yes.
We'll keep moving. Darren, what's up, man?
Going on, gentlemen?
You know, just enjoying this Wednesday night. What do you got for us?
Kind of curious, when we're talking about guys like Kuminga, a couple of questions. One, how confident are y'all on the three coaches, the Jokic coach, the cat from Toronto, and Atkinson, on being able to develop a guy like Kuminga? And second question is, what kind of your thoughts? I saw a lot of highlights and was watching some video of Trey Murphy. What do y'all think about him at number 14?
Those are great questions. So I'll say this. I do like the Warriors' development hires. It clearly shows that they recognize the weakness and they want to address it. With that said, I don't know how much that can like speed up Kuminga's process. That just means he's getting better coaching. And in theory, better development coaches will get him to where he needs to go. But I don't know that they can, you know, Kuminga to me, tell me if I'm wrong here, looks like a 3-year project. Looks like year 3 to 4 is when he starts turning into a player who might be a winning player. I don't know that there, you know, if there's a coach out there who can like speed that up to make it a 1-year process, like give him all the money in the world.
I don't think that's what it is. I think, and I agree with you that I think the best way to judge the Warriors hires, And I think the Warriors hires have been really good. I think the best way to judge the hires is by what the rest of the league thinks of them, and what the rest of the league thinks of them, you can tell by the fact that they were all sought after and had offers to go other places and have for the last couple of years. So I think the Warriors and Warriors fans should be happy about those hires. But what a good development staff does is not necessarily speed up the process. It just gives a greater chance, if the player is willing and wants to put the work in, gives a greater chance that they will reach whatever their individual potential is. So I think that I think Warriors fans should be excited about the new hires, but that doesn't mean that the 3-year Kuminga process is going to take 1 year. It just means that the 3-year Kuminga process is more likely to happen than it would be.
Yeah, with they're not Miracle workers.
Correct. And by the way, I think it was Andy said a couple pods ago that he started calling Kuminga the wing wise man. I think that's a pretty decent comparison. That different jobs, but I think that's a pretty decent.
Yeah, all the tools in the world. Not really sure how to use any of the tools yet. If he can get involved with game planning, and 50% of the issue with Wiseman this year was the Warriors just kind of let him play. They wanted him to figure it out and see how it looked. He really needed structure. Maybe someone like Atkinson, we can see young players being a little more productive, because he might actually bring a different voice, which is like, we can't just let this guy read and react. This guy needs a very like specific job. Otherwise he's going to get lost out.
Yes, you're right. Except they didn't want to let him figure it out when he wanted to shoot threes. They kind of tried to rein that in.
Right.
And I think it was pretty important for somebody that clearly lacked confidence and got down on himself and was a perfectionist. I think it was incumbent on the Warriors to give him a few little things that he could succeed at and then build him up, as opposed to trying to flood his brain with a bunch of things and then having him not do so well and then get down on himself. I think that was kind of the misstep, or one of the missteps.
Agreed. Let's do this one real quick. I know you've looked at Trey Murphy and Chris Duarte. Give me your thought. Compare those two for me. Like, what do you think of them? Which one do you like more?
Yeah, I think I like differences. Murphy more. I just like, I don't trust the Duarte jumper. And I don't trust him to run a lot of pick and roll. And so I think, and also because of his age, I think he's kind of maybe maxed out. I don't see it. And I could be wrong. I know a lot of people around the league really like him. There are even some rumors that he has promises places, but I like Murphy's size. There's something about Duarte that I just don't love. So, I think I'm a Murphy guy on this one.
And Murphy, I mean,
the size, like there's something. And maybe this is just like a knock on Duarte. I just don't really see it.
Murphy's 6'9", and he can shoot and he can move laterally. Like that alone is something every team's looking for. So, I wouldn't be surprised if Murphy went at 14 or even 13 or something, just because it's like the Cam Johnson thing. Remember when Phoenix moved up really high for Cam Johnson? I was like, why? Then you watch the
finals, because he's 6'8", 6'9", he can shoot.
Exactly. Like at a certain point, there's certain skills every team just needs. So, all right, we keep moving. Ryan, hey, what's up, man?
Nothing much. Got home from work like 4 hours ago. Just been chilling. But firstly, I just want to address this thing. Suggs, by my estimations, will fall to 7 just because of the tendencies these other teams have in the draft above us. Toronto forever has taken high upside wings with their early first round picks. Orlando loves length and they're not taking a guard. And Oklahoma just loves athleticism. I don't think Suggs fits that bill. And then also, two hypothetical trades. SGA for Wiseman, 7, 14, and 2 future firsts. And then the other one is Siakam and 4 for 7, Wiseman, 14, Wiggins, and 2 future firsts. Which one would you do? And who says no?
Okay. I think we talked about the Siakam one. I think
we're Did you get all of that?
Yeah. Well, the Siakam one was the one we talked about. Siakam plus four, which would be presumably Suggs for, you know, like Wiseman in the picks. I think we're in agreement that, like, it depends how many future picks you're giving. Like, there's a certain number where you're like, all right, that's too much, but who knows? But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, we didn't mention his name. So there's reports that OKC offered him in the six to move up to one, and Detroit said no. And there's also reports that, like, OKC doesn't really want to pay him. So it's a natural name for, is he attainable by a trade? Is he worth all that stuff? I don't know. What do you think of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander?
He's a good player, and he's a good fit for the Warriors. I didn't hear Wiggins' name mentioned in either of those trades. So we have to do a little finessing to make money work. But Shai's a really good player, and I think he's 24 can play 1-2. I mean, he would be a great fit anywhere. He can hoop. I think he'd be a good fit for the Warriors. Kind of an all-around guy, will guard. Came off a season where he was, you know, 50, 40, 80 and change on some really good splits. So, yeah, I think nobody really knows what OKC is doing. Everybody's kind of just waiting for them to pounce with all of their 148 draft picks over the next few years. The question is Shai going to be the centerpiece of their rebuild, or is he even at 24? I think he is a little too old and not on their timeline. And do they want to get completely younger? 23.
Yeah.
So, by the way, if I was Detroit, Shai is that good that I would consider it. Him and six for one, I think that should be on the table for them. I don't know if he's actually available, but at some point OKC needs to plant their flagpole and say, this is what we're doing, and, you know, start the path forward. You can't always just churn the assets. So I don't know what's going on, but everybody should be interested in SGA because he's damn good.
Yeah. I'm skeptical he's available. But, you know, you never know. All right, let's move forward. Luke, what's up, my man?
How you going, buddy? You good?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm in a great
mood. How you going, Aaron? I haven't seen you.
Better than I deserve, brother. This is the highlight of my night. Now, let's go.
Sammy, can you just – I know you're a busy man. I know you're plugged in and all, but can you just fucking calm me down a bit about, like – I sat back yesterday. I listened to you and Andy. You're being fantastic hosts and everything. But some of the fucking attitude in this chat and or all around Warriors Twitter about accepting mediocrity is just dead set disgraceful. Like, I get it. Like you just said just before, there's no veterans, like there's no superstar like deal out there, right? But what did you say all the last 12 months when we were in the shit? Like developing Wiseman, blah blah blah. What is the key word that you've said since day fucking one? It's all about the margins. Now all of a sudden I'm seeing all this shit going. Oh, Warriors won't fucking trade up because it's just a margins thing. It's not really going to blow them away. What happened to the fucking margins? Like, you know, like we've got Steph Curry here. Like I know people got different opinions. I understand that. I'm not going to argue with people that, you know, got different opinions. They're set on that, but. We've got fucking Steph Curry on our team and he's missed the playoffs the last two fucking years. Like, can you guys even tell me what our best starting five's going to be if we don't make a big star? Like, the guy's usage rate, I saw Tommy and Tony and, like, Fake and all that going, like, his usage rate was out of control. Like, you can't expect the guy to keep carrying us for so long. And we're just talking about two kids. Oh, maybe he hits, maybe he doesn't. What are we doing here?
First off, appreciate the call. Yeah. On the macro level, I agree with you. The one thing I will say is, while Aaron is right that, like, the draft is kind of a marker day that a lot of trades happen, I'm not going to judge the Warriors roster going into next year based off of if they make the picks tomorrow or they make the trade tomorrow. There's still free agency. I'm getting the impression that some players' trade demands won't come till later in the summer. Maybe, maybe not, but there is time. I think the only thing I feel pretty confident about is The Warriors are going to put forth the calm front, but I don't think they're going to have a happy Steph Curry and Draymond Green if they like bring in two rookies, use the mid-level on an average-ish player and like bring back Bazemore or something on a vet minimum and just like bank on that. So I just think it's worth a little patience in terms of how the roster ends, because like, great, they swing a big trade tonight. Doesn't matter. They're not playing a game until mid-October anyway. If it happens tonight, if it happens end of August.
So yeah, this is an artificial deadline. The draft is, but it's kind of just the start of the season. And a lot of people have been saying this, and I happen to agree with it, that basically the draft is also kind of the beginning of free agency for the Warriors, because the Warriors don't have a lot of mechanisms to add talent to their roster. They don't have cap space. They just have the one taxpayer mid-level exception to actually add somebody more than the minimum. So I think tomorrow is kind of the beginning of it. Does that include a trade? Maybe. Does that include taking two guys, hopefully, that at least one of them, maybe two of them, can be rotation players next year? Hopefully. But it's a fair question from Luke. Like, who is going to be, when the games matter, it's going to be Steph, Clay, Draymond, and who next year? Wiggins, maybe, if he's around. Like, it is a fair question. Who is going to be in that closing lineup? That is definitely a fair question.
I think last year they were so blindsided by the Clay injury that they felt sorry for themselves. I don't know that they were as aggressive with the COVID season. Just everything about last year was weird. I don't agree with that, to be honest with you. I thought they could have used last year to churn over and maybe find a player or two more than Jordan Poole and Juan Toscano-Anderson at the end of the season. They don't have that excuse this season. And I think Steph and Draymond particularly gave them a bit of a pass last year because, I don't know, man, Clay tore his Achilles on draft night with camp opening 3 days later. Like,
yeah,
at some point you like, who are you going to blame? Like, you know, like you're going to hold Joe Lacob accountable for bad, you know, bad luck in that scenario. Right. So I just don't think they're going to get the same like leash from the veteran players that they got.
I agree, and they shouldn't. But the one place I would hold Lacob accountable, and he was last year was the time, because the Warriors are a team with such a deep pocket. Yes, they were you know, had the new building and were not getting people in it, and that was a financial burden to them. But the Warriors are a team with deep pockets, and so because of the uncertainty of last season, and even into this season, was the time to be able to leverage that money. And there was going to be teams that were going to have to sell off because of their financial situation that the Warriors, because of their deep pockets, maybe would have been able to take advantage of. They tried with Oubre, so I'll give them credit for that. But as Luke was mentioning, around the margin, it did not seem to work very well.
I mean, I'm trying not to overreact to anything right now because, like you said, draft is beginning of the part of the year where you can remake the roster. They have month plus to get this done. Granted, most of the stuff that matters will happen in the next 3 weeks, 2 weeks. They don't get a pass, but I'm just saying we got to wait to see how the roster ends before we burn everything. Now, just to be clear, I get the cynicism and the skepticism because the last 2 years, not a lot of positive signs. There's a lot of feeling sorry for yourself after KD left and then feeling sorry for yourself with Clay's injuries. Not a lot of development, just not the best use of the last two seasons, I guess is the best way to put it.
To clean up what I was going to say, I give them full credit for spending for Oubre and going for it. But to get like for that to be fully an A, then they have to keep that asset and not fumble it, as it appears that they have, by not trading him for anything at the deadline or being able to re-sign him or sign a trade. Maybe they may still be able to maintain that salary spot and that asset. But to get full credit, they needed to not fumble what appears to have fumbled the Oubre bag.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, limited mechanisms to add talent. You know, if you're not going to use the TPE or whatever you get with Oubre, find talent another way. And I don't know. I really just don't know how he can. But one way or another, they got to figure it out. All right, let's keep moving. Mike Mikus, what is up, my man?
Hey, boys, how we doing?
Good.
Okay, so, you know, I don't want to get grim here, but provided we don't make well, I'm already feeling grim, but provided we don't make a trade tomorrow, do we feel like it's a pretty much a certainty, a foregone conclusion that Steph does not sign the extension this summer? Do we think that he's ready to, like, you know, be Kendall Roy, lean into it, be like a killer and be like, I'm not doing this? Or is he still going to sign it, do we think, if we had to guess? And then as a Cowboys fan, I'm wondering, are the Warriors on the brink of being the next Dallas Cowboys? Hate to ask that question, but I'm wondering, is Joe Lacob just a younger Jerry Jones, possibly? Curious what your guys' thoughts are on those two questions.
I threw that one out there facetiously a while ago.
That's not bad.
I hope I didn't speak it into existence. Especially when you consider that Cowboys' like greatest glory run was at the beginning of the Jerry Jones ownership before he got his hands all over everything.
Oof. What's Jerry's kid's name? Is it Steven?
I believe so.
Yeah.
He has multiple sons.
Yeah, but the one that like works in the – are there Kirk Lake of vibes there? I don't know. Is that a comparison?
The whole comparison is – you know, Jerry's the star of the show. It doesn't matter who the Bob Myers figure is. He's making the decisions, him and his son. So that is the basis of the analogy.
I mean, I think that has legs. I got to be honest with you. I think that has legs so far. Although Jerry doesn't have three titles. I don't.
He has three. He got three at the beginning of his ownership with Jimmy Jones and then Barry Switzer. Yeah. If anything, it's like thinking you're indestructible because you just buy the team and start winning titles.
Yeah. Maybe this is.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna. This is another topic. All right. I'm in too good a mood right now. We're not doing this right now. Jake, what's up, man?
Hey, what's up, guys? I just had two quick little things. The first one was when I heard the news about they were saying Draymond's assembling a team at the Olympics, I kept wondering what big star there was to trade, but it kind of took my mind to, do you think that means that he's just going after Batum hard, assuming they're close in proximity there and they pass by, you know, him or Patty Mills? And then the second thing is at 14, I think my preference would be to take Jalen Johnson. So I think if they can just get him to the beginning of the season and there's no issues and nothing's really coming out and he plays a few games and shows flashes, I think there's a lot of trade value there and a potential trade package midseason. So what do you guys think about those?
Jalen Johnson, we've touched on. I just don't think the Warriors will do it. I haven't entertained it because nothing that this group has shown me has indicated that they're going to take the guy with character red flags, whether they're fair or not.
I agree with that, especially because this is a draft that has a lot of huge high upside guys.
I do agree though that like Jalen Johnson on raw talent should be in that like 4 to 6 range. Like he should be, his name should be mentioned with Scotty Barnes and Jalen Suggs and those guys.
But I agree, but it's a draft that has, whether it's Keon Johnson or Zaire, like it's a draft that has guys that have huge talent that for whatever reason didn't show it in college or need to harness it or have some issues. So because I think it's not just one or two huge, and Kuminga for that matter too, it's not just like one or two huge high upside guys.
Kuminga's flag is gigantic black hole when he gets the ball. Yes,
indeed. Indeed. So I suspect that the Warriors will probably stay away, but going back to a question earlier, I think what the Warriors do at 14 is also kind of tied to what they do at 7.
Yeah. And then on the Draymond recruiting trail, I mean, Draymond's a social guy, so he's always recruiting. I mentioned it last night, but the one thing I always credit Draymond for is he knows who he is as a player. He knows he's not some like 25 point per game scorer. He knows his game only flourishes when he plays around guys who can score and shoot. And he can be the guy that, you know, basically the ultimate glue guy. Right. So
I enjoyed your take. Was that? Did I hear that today or yesterday?
I don't know,
to the show. But I thought that was a great take from you. That Draymond knows he's the best when he has more high level scorers around him. It makes him look the best. So I think that's a quality basketball take from you.
I'm wondering who is still at the Olympics. Bradley Beal's not there.
No.
I guess Zach LaVine. Zach LaVine hasn't signed an extension, but I haven't heard anyone talking about trading for him. It seems foregone. He's going to take the money from Chicago. No,
I don't know. I would not be so sure of that. And even if he does, that doesn't mean that he can't do it and then force his way out immediately thereafter. There's also a point guard from Portland who is pretty good, plays in Portland. That's pretty good.
Sure.
That there are some rumors swirling around. So,
obviously he's recruiting Keldon Johnson.
There you go. And as Mikas mentioned, you know, maybe some of the international guys who are not going to be, you know, first tier free agents, but maybe down the list a little bit in the Warriors budget that might be available.
Last year's team would have killed for a Patty Mills and a Nick Batum. So
maybe he's trying to get KD back.
Yeah, that's true. Rehashing. It's like the late night text to the ex.
Well,
what's up?
The late night, the late night text from the Oracle parking lot. Isn't that the story?
Yeah,
they're in Tokyo. You said Dre's knocking on KD's hotel room at like 3 o'clock in the morning. You up?
Yeah. let's go out for a bite. All right, let's keep moving. Hey, Shik, what's going on, man?
Yeah, so I was going to say my favorite draft memory was definitely trading Jason Richardson for Brandon Wright. Oh, God. That was actually my first draft memory.
I think we could do at least 2 hours on, like, Warrior draft fails just in our lifetime.
Can we have a moment for those Charlotte Bobcats gray and light blue and navy and orange striped uniforms? Those things were...
I thought him and Anthony Randolph for the future of our front court, but yeah, it definitely didn't pan out. So my question is, with Kuminga, do you think he like immediately becomes it's like kind of detrimental to take him because he immediately becomes like mentioned in trade rumors, like from the time he gets drafted?
It's a good question. I mean, so everyone. I recall last year, the whole thing was like all the prospects want to be drafted by the Warriors because you get to play with Steph Curry, you go to a strong organization, and we saw with Wiseman, if anything, it can sometimes be the opposite for some guys where it's like the pressure of that situation is a little too much for like a teenager, right? Do you think something like that would happen with Kuminga?
I think the problem for Kuminga is what he needs
basketball?
To figure himself out and yes, he develops best somewhere where he has the chance to fail and where he has a chance to get shots and get touches and work through what works and doesn't work for him at the NBA level. And that's just not something that's going to be available for him with the Warriors. He's a terrible fit with the Warriors and I don't think he contributes at all. But again, like, I think at seven, you might just have to bite the bullet and take him because the talent is so overwhelming, whether that's to keep him and develop him or trade him with the understanding that he's not going to work for this year's team and he's not going to help.
Can you even send him to the G League? Like, is there a precedent? Because we haven't like really reached a place where teams feel comfortable sending top 10 picks to the G League the way, you know, baseball with the minor leagues were.
Right. Oh, no, there's definitely, I mean, yes. There's definitely, I mean, like Hashim Thabeet was the second pick. He played in the G League. Yeah, there definitely is. It doesn't happen much, but there is definitely a precedent for high lottery picks going to the G League.
Uh-oh. The Mercurial option zero. What's up, man?
I think that Jay Rich trade would have been fine if we didn't take Brandon Wright. We could have just taken Joakim Noah and he would have been like a really good setup for 10 years. Then no one would be complaining then. Shit.
We had Biedrins. Biedrins better than Joakim Noah. What are you talking
about? Take the talent. Figure it out.
Could have had the Twin Towers. Twin Towers.
You're going to play, you're playing Biedrins with that Ivan Drago hair and Joakim Noah with that rotation of the earth jumper together. I love it.
I'm just saying that the trade is one thing. The draft, the execution of the pick is another. Anyways, could you guys see a situation where Lacob gets his sports entertainment media technology big brain going on? And imagine this. Suggs falls to 7. They take Kuminga anyways.
Now, I think we've reached the point of the mock draft machinations where we need the draft to happen. I don't even know how that would happen. How is Suggs getting to 7 with Kuminga also off the board?
I mean, we get the first 3, and then Book Knight.
Someone in the chat goes Sengun goes in the top 5.
It's Book Knight and Barnes 4 and 5 in some way, and then I don't know who's 6. If it's not
Josh,
Kuminga or
Josh
Suggs,
Giddey.
It's Giddey, I guess.
Oh, it's wow.
Someone falls in love with his IQ and whiteness.
Yeah. Maybe? I don't know. If Suggs falls to 7, I'll give you a Sam guarantee the Warriors take him. Doesn't matter to us on the board. I feel very confident about that.
If how about this? If Kuminga and Suggs are both on the board at 7, I think the Warriors should do whatever it takes within reason to trade 14 to Orlando for 8 and throw in whatever you need to so you can take both of them. How about that?
Oh wow. We're getting deep into it. We really need this draft to happen. All right, we're gonna take a couple more calls. Ricky, what's up, man?
All right, so I wanted to ask you about this the recent Pelicans-Grizzlies trade that just went down. So reports say that the Grizzlies are still trying to move up again. And I think one of the articles I read mentioned Kuminga and Book Knight as targets, which is kind of within the Warriors' range. So is there a scenario you could see the Warriors potentially trading back with the Grizzlies and maybe, I don't know, maybe get their first-round pick back that they traded last year?
It's not a bad idea. It wouldn't surprise me if the Warriors trade was something like we'll swap 7 and 10 and maybe give us like Kyle Anderson or DeAndre Melton. Like you pick up a rotation player that way.
Yes.
Very like boring. Like it's not flashy, but like also we watched a team with an 8-man rotation for the final 25 games. And I'm not sure all 8 of them should have been playing anyway. So it's like they need players, period. And if you if you are convinced Josh Giddey is the best prospect, but you know you can get him at 10, why not get the extra asset, right? Something like that. And I'm just making up a name here, but like it makes all the sense in the world to do something like that. If you think the guy you can get at 10 is better than, or you can get the guy you want.
Yeah, yes, I agree with that. I just, the way that I disagree with the premise or the question is that, and I agree with you, is that if the Warriors were going to do that, it would be for Bain or Melton or, I don't think you're getting slow-mo, but you're getting a rotation guy as opposed to getting a draft pick for it because the Warriors don't need more draft picks. The Warriors
right.
need guys that can play in a rotation.
Unless you're going to immediately flip that draft pick for said player. So
fair.
Yeah. Either way. They need players who can play in next year's rotation. And ideally, if they're acquiring them through trades, you're hoping they're under the age of 30 and can give you a few years. So, all right. We're gonna end it here with McWalters. McWalters is like our perfect optimistic end the show.
That's right. We're gonna bless everyone here. Everyone stay safe at the event tomorrow. It's gonna be great. Looking forward to it. This thing seems more complicated than the neural surgery I'm going to sit in on Friday morning trying to decipher what the heck we're going to do here at the draft. Legit, I'm sitting in on one, and it's like, this is nuts. And like, hey, what can you do, right? Hey, but it's going to be good. We're going to get 2 assets out of this. They're going to make 2 great picks. My favorite Warrior draft that I can remember was the Jay Rich, Troy Murphy, and Agent Zero, because we got Option Zero in the chat here, the original Zero. Here, and that was phenomenal. It's great, of course. The team also sucks, so we needed an envision of all that talent. But you know, when you get 2 picks in the lottery, you can't really go wrong. We'll round out the bench, everything's gonna be good, and we're gonna get some vets in the free agency. It's gonna be awesome. And if we don't do that, well, we'll just all get on Green Room and yell and scream, and we'll feel better because we got all that out. So it's gonna be good either way. And Aaron, thanks for being here. Awesome. That's all I got.
Thank you, McWalters. Everyone, enjoy the draft.